Hello, and welcome to the fifth episode of What Our Parents Said by The Woodsman. I am Jack Woods. With me, as always, is my fraternal brother, Landon Wood. Landon, how are you today?
Doing pretty well. It's a good day. Excited to talk about something positive.
Yes. In the day. Yes. Let's not take something positive and make it extremely depressing like we did with happiness.
Yeah, let's not do that. Let's talk about something good.
Let's talk about joy, people. Joy. What did your parents tell you about joy, Mr. Landon?
So I'm going to start this one off with a question to you.
Okay.
So last episode, you talked about the difference between joy and happiness, and you were very adamant about it.
Okay.
So would you like to elaborate?
So last episode, I equated happiness to relief. So I would say that joy is something that you should pursue over happiness, because happiness is in fact temporary, and joy, I feel, has more long-term connotations.
So what's the difference in the actual feeling then?
You can embrace the bad parts about joy, and that's what I really love about it. You can appreciate what's in front of you, even if it isn't exactly the way that you want it to be. With happiness, it's very one-sided, right? With happiness, you just get hit with it, but something can very easily take that away. When you're joyful about something, you may encounter some difficulties in maintaining the process, but the process is still there. The best example I can say, at least right now, is the difference between 40 years of marriage and 4 months of dating. 4 months of dating, you're very happy, right? You're, you know, being very physical. Oh, I love you, baby. This is the greatest. You think that you can keep that up for 40 years? You think you're not going to experience any fights? I'm going to take a 40-year marriage over 4 months of dating every time.
Yeah, that makes sense. So would you say that joy would be content with how things are compared to expecting things to be a specific way, like happiness?
Well, just that. It's a process, right? So joy means that you're continually working on whatever it is you're working on. I would say that you have a joy for percussion, right? Because you continue to go back to it, you can continue to practice and get better at all times, right?
Oh, we could say that.
We could definitely say that.
Yeah, sure.
At least for your school of music professors.
Yeah. Theoretically, that is what's supposed to be happening in this situation.
Right. That's fair. Well, okay, then
but
I can...
No, take it back. I absolutely do love music. Music... Even if I'm angry at it at times, I still am joyful when I do music,
mm-hmm.
when I practice music. I've been taking classes on music recently, and I think the difference between making music and doing music, I don't think I've said making music in the past year except for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because the difference is astonishing once you see the other side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you... Even when you're listening, when you are an audience member to music, you are still doing music. You're part of the process. Music is a huge process.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also like to think that happiness is instant, whereas joy is, you need to build up to joy. And I can definitely use a musician's journey as an example, because when you just start out playing, nobody's really happy with anything. Nobody's happy with the sound the instrument is making.
No.
Nobody is happy with how the performance goes. Like, you're not expecting a whole lot at first. But once you start to play scales, you're able to recognize music, able to recognize notes, you start playing better. That's when you experience that joy. That's when you get that, I don't want to say addicting nature, but you do.
Oh, it is, though.
You do.
Joy is addictive, but...
You got to chase it, and you got to enjoy the process. And that's why I think that joy is something you should pursue over happiness.
In this case, I think it would be joy is finding a balance between your expectations and what actually happens.
Yeah.
Something that my parents said is minimal to no expectations. If you don't have any expectations, you're not going to be disappointed. And it gets to the point, if you don't have any expectations, you can't not expect anything and still have, like, an emotion towards it, right? So, if you have an expectation, then it's either going to be good or bad. Mm-hmm. If you have no expectation, you don't expect good or bad.
Right.
So, it's an interesting balance between randomness and accepting things for how they are. So I watched something earlier today where it was a farmer, all right? And he's going through and he has one of his really young horses run away. And the town people are come up to him. They're all freaking out. And they're like, dude, that's so terrible. You lost one of your mares. Like, that's terrible. I wish you the best. And his response was, maybe. The next day, 7 wild horses come back with his previous horse. And so the people come up to him and are like, dude, that's such great news. It was so bad yesterday. And his response is, of course, maybe. The next day, one of the wild horses breaks his son's leg. They come up to him. Oh my God, terrible, terrible news. I can't believe this event has happened. Of course, he says maybe. And mm-hmm. The next day, an army comes for a draft. And because his son's leg was broken, he didn't have to go and be drafted into the army.
Damn.
It's a crazy story. But it's the story. The point of the story is that you never know what fortune you have. Right? Mm-hmm. You never know if something's going to turn out to your benefit or to your detriment. And without knowing that, in any situation, you just have to be accepting of how things are.
Yeah, and I feel in the process of obtaining joy, that is paramount. You have to manage your expectations, and you have to learn how to be content with where you are while also striving for more. And it's that wonderful balance like you were just talking about. And I got to say, my parents were quite the opposite of yours. They told me to have extremely high expectations of myself and others around me. And I had a very interesting childhood with those principles in place, mainly because I wasn't sure. I had to learn how to lower my expectations for people.
Yeah.
And I had to learn that people don't think and talk and act like me. And yeah. And how that relates to joy, becoming me has been very joyful thus far. So I had to learn how to be me. And I don't think a lot of people learn how to be themselves.
That is one of the biggest lessons that my stepdad told me, is be you, so no one else will.
Yeah.
And you can't be anybody else. You're just trying to escape yourself. And that is... it's never going to work. It's never going to happen.
No, it's never going to happen.
So I think that I had kind of have a revelation today with joy. I read something that joy and simple happiness is never outside of the present. So whether you're thinking about your memories, whether you're thinking about your past or being worried about your future, it doesn't matter, because that's only happening in the present moment. Your past, that's just your memories. That is just data stored in your brain that isn't complete. Your memory is never complete because it's just you pulling back data on your database. Present right now is the only way you can live. And if you try to live in the future, in the plans, today my moment was I had just eaten. I had got some assignments out of the way. It was some listenings. I was having a great time. And I had like 40 extra minutes that I had no clue I was going to have. So it's like, what am I going to do with this? And so instead of being like, oh, I need a journal, and like figuring out what I'm going to do for the rest of my day and how, what homework I need to do and stress and future, I was like, wait a second. What do I want to do right now? What is going to be best for me right now? And it's like, oh. And I dropped all of my stuff, grabbed my book and my water, went outside and ate Cheez-Its while reading for like 40 minutes. It was the best. And I just set a timer, set my phone off, set everything to the side, and was like, okay, I'm just going to take this 30 minutes to zone off and read my book.
Yeah, a little bit different for me. So, went from class to working on homework until class, and then some editing stuff, and then some homework, and then spent a little bit of physical activity playing some volleyball.
Woo! Volleyball.
And then after that, I came up here and I decided, all right, I'm done. No more. Not today. Not to mention, I was also working a day-long newspaper shift that required an immense amount of attention. So I am very glad that today is just about over. Yeah. Very glad.
Sounds like it was a long day, my guy.
Yes, because unlike you, I didn't say, what's going to make, what do I want to do right now? Instead, I said, what do I need to do right now?
Yeah.
So, I as a school of music, I'm sure that you know that reality far too well, but.
Yeah, it was a day with that mindset of, what do I need to do? What do I have to do? What needs to be next on my to-do list to, wait a second, I can take a second to breathe, and this is where I'm going to find my happiness, my relief, if you will, but also joy, just, which leads into my next point I wanted to make, is that joy is all about the appreciation in the moment, and I think it's more about your perspective on how you're seeing everything than it is anything else. It's being present, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you think that there's a connection between what you remember and the joy that you've had?
What I remember, the joy associated with the memory?
Yeah, so like, do you think you remember things better because you had joy in them?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Well, obviously, because if you remember something that was a lot of fun in the process of what you wanted to do, of course, you know, you're going to look on that fondly, even the bad times. One of the best examples I can bring up is when guys like Segura and Jeselnik and Bill Burr and all of them, and they talk about the worst they ever bombed on stage, right? They're always laughing about it. They're always talking about it. And it's because in the process of joy, they learned something about themselves. They weren't particularly happy that they bombed so spectacularly, but I'm sure that they appreciate that bomb more now that they're successful and they've established themselves and established a career.
So joy can also be retrospective, but probably because that's because their expectations have changed, right?
Well, I do think that we taint our memories with positivity when we really want them to. In the moment, we like to be ourselves, and we react as ourselves, and we don't react as how we want to react necessarily, sometimes at least. So when we look back on something, we remember it in a light that was more positive towards us. My parents like to tell the story about when I was 4 years old at the NASCAR Thunder Park in Sevierville, Tennessee, and some kid took me out at like Baby Bristol. And so what I did was when we were all called into pit road, you're supposed to stop and let other kids get on. I just full on hammered it and nailed that kid in the back of the head.
Oh, jeez.
Now, I look on that memory as very positive because, let's face it, I won. You know, if you're getting run over by a kiddie go-kart at a NASCAR speed park in Tennessee, for Christ's sake, you have to kind of make your own memories there. You kind of have to, you know, like...
What? But like, what do you mean by that? You mean...
I look on that memory very positively because nobody ever gets Jack Woods, right? And if you do get me, I'm going to get you back at least one time. So that's joy for me. That's the joy of becoming me. I learned that I always have to get you back. You're never going to win. You might win the day. You might be temporarily happy. But in the long term, I'm going to be more joyful when I remember it and get back to you on it.
So you're like the guy in the videos that smacks the shit out of somebody's neck when they were not expecting it and then find it funny because you got it back.
No, because I never initiate it. I never start the shoving. I don't start the fight, I end the fight.
But what if there's backstory? Like that guy did something bad to you, and then...
Oh, makes the story even better then, are you kidding me?
See? You would be that guy if that was the right context.
So, you know, like in like the Mission Impossible movies, at the very end when Tom Cruise like pulls the blanket from the table and's like, ha ha, see, we got you. That's what I strive to be.
That I got you guy?
Yeah. You thought you were going to win, but you didn't. That's what I strive to be. That's what I love to be.
Underdog.
Yes. Well, it's sort of. More like the wronged making a right.
Okay. I could see that.
So that's been the joy of me becoming me, me realizing that about myself.
It's really interesting how our most extreme emotions are tied to our memory, right?
Sort of. You want to have those emotions with those memories. Nobody wants to remember their life in a dull manner.
But you remember, if you're like, hey, what do you remember in third grade? It's probably the stuff that was either the most exciting, the most embarrassing, or the most terrifying.
The ones that had the most emotion.
Yeah, the most extreme.
Right.
Yeah, the most extreme emotions stick to our memories.
I believe that joy is the most impressionable emotion you can feel. Because I remember the times that I was joyful more than I remember the times that I was scared, embarrassed, angry, brutally upset. I remember the times where I felt most like myself when I was joyful. Hmm. When I was in the moment with somebody or in the moment with myself and I felt joy. Those are the most potent memories I have.
I feel like if happiness is relief, then joy would be like deja vu of what it means to be you.
Interesting. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So, like, sounds like we both had the issue that we find it really hard to be ourselves. And so you're always trying to, you set expectations up for yourself, and you're telling yourself you need to be one way or you need to not be one way. And in all of that, you kind of get mixed up and muddled on what you're trying to do and who you actually are, and is it all just a game? And then all of a sudden, you'll find this moment where you're joyful, and it happens suddenly. And that is when you're truly yourself, right? Hmm. So it would you find yourself being in the most natural state.
Yes.
And so it's kind of like a deja vu back to who you are.
Right.
Like, because, you know, deja vu, you don't expect deja vu to happen. Deja vu is just like, oh, and you're like, oh, snap, deja vu is happening. This is awesome, right?
Right.
But being comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Landon, kind of shifting gears here. When you think of joy, what do you immediately associate it with?
I associate joy most with gratification, like gratification and doing it with other people. So whether it's I had a great day on the lake and I felt like I had some really good moments with my family and we feel all close and snuggly, right? And then, like, being close with you and Sam and our brothers, I definitely have some specific moments where I'm like, ah, this is home, this is us. And those are the joys. Like, it's the community and gratification.
You like to share your joy. You like to have a collective joy amongst yourself and others.
Yeah,
I do. That's a very, very selfless attitude to have.
Thank you.
So.
And I think it comes from not having many joyful moments, and knowing what it feels to be excluded, you try to include other people.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So if you know that almost everybody has a moment where they're not happy, where they aren't with joy, where they're facing their worst, because everything's relative, so your worst is your worst. That's the worst you've ever had. So if you get to share your amazing moments, you can always share your amazing moments.
Right.
And that is, it makes them that much more significant.
That's a good point. And I've never really thought about why my memories, my best memories, were so joyful until you drew that connection. There are people there. There are people beside you. Yeah. You're joyful because of the time that you spent with people. So that's a very, very good point.
We're social creatures.
We are social creatures.
And we're just trying to do the best we can. If we can do the best we can with others, it makes it so much better.
I never really thought about it that way. And that makes me appreciate joy just a little bit more.
Something that I really miss is percussion ensemble.
Oh, okay.
To do music with other people. And especially, it's one of the most intimate things. Because you, honestly, you have to communicate so much with just a look or like a body movement. So we're like, okay, we're all going to come in and do a crescendo. And if I want to look at you, be playing something and focusing, and I want to tell you to crescendo, you have to be able to read me as a person. And it, once you're able to do that, and you do that in a way to create emotion through music, it's beautiful. It's something that I truly miss from last semester. The COVID world has messed that up.
We'll get it back, bud.
Oh, yeah, we'll get it back. But it's reminiscing and appreciating that is also important. I think that also makes you appreciate joy that much more when you do have it.
Right, and I think that joy is one of the most conscious emotions you can understand. You feel joyful. You feel that sense of satisfaction, gratification, sort of like an inner peace. You know, when you really experience joy, when you really feel present in the moment with others, you feel it. It's just this. It's something you can't even control. But it's something that you recognize. Mm-hmm. It's like you're breaking the fourth wall when you realize how joyful you are.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's like that deja vu.
Yes, exactly.
Just, oh snap!
So that definitely helps me appreciate joy a lot more, and I want to thank you for bringing that to me, because that's definitely going to make me appreciate little moments like recording a podcast with my fraternal brother a little bit more.
Yeah, no problem, man. That's what we're here for. That's what we're doing. But, yeah, and I think it's also something that you can base entire relationships on. Mm. So sharing with that, I used to want to create a formula to create the perfect relationship, and you can't do it. It is impossible. But I did find some key components as I was just thinking about things. In a relationship, you have to share experiences, mm-hmm. and you have to bond over those experiences. I mean, if you go on the super negative side of the spectrum, some of the closest bonds have been when people fight each other. Like, if you fist fight in the backyard and you have to work together for there and after, you guys are super close. Like, boxers and their sparring partners were some of the closest people, because iron sharpens iron, and that's what you can build a relationship on. But at the same time, sharing moments where you work together, you have that strife, and you come out on top of it for that joy, that gratification of, I did this, we did this together, it created something positive.
I can definitely take it from there and talk about my relationship with Olivia, my wonderful fiance. We decided that we were going to quarantine together after you and I and the rest of DePaul were sent home in early March. And we decided that we were going to go into quarantine together. And we built up this fantastic idea in our head of what 5 months of quarantine was going to look like. We talked about doing this like it was going to be a vacation, like it was going to be an extended weekend here at DePaul, like when she used to visit me during freshman year. And what we realized very early on is that living together is a lot different than the fantasy that we wanted. Mm-hmm. And we had to learn how to live with each other. We had to learn how to control each other's tendencies and, you know, learn how to adjust to each other. And there were times where we fought, and it wasn't mild. It was definitely trial by fire. It was very hard at times, but at no point did I ever feel regret or anger or that I moved in with her. Yeah. Obviously, I felt anger in the moment, but it was the joy of learning this person through and through. It's the joy of becoming a couple together, growing together, learning together, learning about each other, learning about the world, shaping our worldviews together. And it created this really joyful environment, this beautiful, beautiful process. And the only thing I would say is I wish I had moved in sooner. Genuinely, because I fully trust her with everything. I truly understand her and it's vice versa. It's funny how these things are reciprocated.
Yeah.
And some of the most joyful memories I have over the summer are just little moments that I would have taken for granted if I was only searching for that immediate gratification and that immediate happiness and that, you know, that quick serotonin boost. But just because I had those little moments that I didn't appreciate before, it only enhanced the relationship.
From outside looking in, and I also don't have like a committed relationship that I've gotten to anywhere close to that level. So it honestly just sounds like you're talking about family. It honestly sounds like you're talking about like what a roommate, but on an extreme level. I could only think about living with my brothers and living with my mom and stepdad and like what that was like over quarantine. It's such a familiarity once you go through such hard times together.
Mm-hmm.
Like once you see the worst in somebody, you're able to truly appreciate the best.
Well, right? Well, yeah, and I don't think that we saw each other at our worst, but I do think that we saw each other at a very vulnerable state.
Yeah, I guess intimate.
Would be a great word for this occasion.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, and well, I kind of feel the same thing going on right now with DU and some of the guys around here. I especially feel it with you and Sam, but I also feel it with Tebby. I feel it with Gabe and Seth Fagan and Eddie and Javi, especially Javi,
yeah,
and Roth and all them. I feel like because we are so connected and forced into close quarters together, we're having to learn how to live with each other. We're having to learn that classic rock is going to last until 3 a.m. So, you know, take some NyQuil and go to sleep. And with classic rock, it's, well, if you got a song request, you better say it very, very, very loud, because it's a very loud, we're all learning how to be with each other.
And appreciate like the 50-50 chance that your song is not going to get approved.
Exactly. Because Gabe and Eddie are just like, nope, we're going to play what we want.
That doesn't fly, kid. That's kind of their vibe. I love them. But it's certainly an awesome experience to go through challenge and get joy out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it is. Joy is more of a byproduct of things rather than it is its own entity, if that makes sense.
I think that joy is a goal you should pursue. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I touched on this earlier with the process thing, and you're sort of saying it in a different way, but it joy isn't handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you have to earn. It's something you have to strive for, which I think that's why I appreciate it more than happiness. Happiness feels good, but it feels hollow. One of the things that my father-in-law likes to say is, when you're having a good time, don't worry, it'll pass. Hmm. And that's why I don't really strive for happiness, because joy is just so much better. I know that eventually we're going to get into an argument, but I'm still going to appreciate the argument because I'm in the process of obtaining joy with you. I'm in the process of learning how to get to know you, learning everything about you. And that to me is a lot more fun than if we had just a relationship filled with quick happiness moments.
That reminds me of my framework for practice and perfection.
Mm.
So last episode I mentioned my mom's practice makes perfect block that she made for me. And it's similar in if you practice and practice and practice and you get that, you notice that you improve, and you're like, okay, cool, that's happiness. Like, I see that I've gotten a little bit better, I've gotten the okay, my percussion teacher has given me my next homework section, next section to work on. But in the longer scheme of things, perfection is the best goal to have, because it will make you the best that you can be. Perfection as a goal, as a thing to strive for, is amazing. Joy as a thing to strive for is amazing. But at the same time, do not expect to be perfect. Always shoot for it, but know that your arrow is not going to miss. But my dad had a quote that he really liked and brought to me. I think because I reminded him of it. But anyways, it's that aim high, because the worst things that happens is you overshoot.
So your father taught you to have high expectations, and your mom and your stepdad were sort of the laissez-faire of the two.
Yeah.
Well, you needed that.
Yeah,
you needed that dynamic. You needed that balance.
My dad really helped me learn that I should always strive to be the best that I can be, because if you always do that, you're not going to ever fail yourself.
Right.
And then my mom and stepdad were like, hey, the best that you can be is who you are right now, and just keep being you, keep doing your best, and you'll be fine. So it was, they both were teaching the same thing in two very different manners. Be the best you can be, but one is in the moment, and the other is work your fucking ass off, right?
Yeah. No, and I get that.
You need both.
I wish I could have been me more growing up. I wish I could have had that self-confidence and that self-esteem.
I haven't felt like me since probably truly felt like me over the summer.
Right. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. Because when you come to college, your freshman year, middle school and high school are just fuck all, fuck arounds.
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
Nobody likes that. Nobody likes those places.
That is not who you are, and you should definitely have probably grown from there.
And if you are still the same way 10 years after you graduate high school, you shouldn't be there.
You haven't grown or changed.
You haven't grown or changed.
There's something crazy going on.
That's insane. Like, you should be institutionalized if you haven't changed in 10 years from high school to the 10-year reunion party. But so I didn't know who I was, middle school or high school. And
nobody does.
Nobody does. And that's what the point that we're making. And then you come to college and you have this notion that you can reinvent yourself, that you can be the person that you want to be. That's something that my dad told me right before I got to college. He told me, Jack, you have an opportunity to be the person you've always wanted to be. You have an opportunity to finally grow and be who you were supposed to be. Because I was very limited in high school and middle school because of the set structure in place. I wasn't allowed to think creatively. I wasn't allowed to really do the things I wanted to do because I was being held back because of my age. Now that I'm here, and now that I'm over the you don't have to pretend to be this person anymore, now I just feel comfortable in my own skin being who I am. And that's why I figured out I wanted to be a comedian. That's why I figured out that I wanted to do a podcast. That's why I figured out I wanted to do a fraternity. You know, like, this is me as raw as it can get. And that's what I most appreciate about my life right now. It's that I feel comfortable in my own skin to do the things I want to do. And I feel like people should strive for that, because I feel a lot of joy in me right now. Even as I'm battling things like depression and anxiety, I feel an immense amount of joy for the people around me. And I don't know if that's the same experience with you, but I really appreciate where I am at, and that's why I feel so much joy.
I think I got caught in the mindset of always searching for perfection. And like today, when I talked about the joy, if you always offload to the future and you're always like, oh, I have to be perfect and all of this, then that by itself will only get you so far. And it's taking the appreciation in the moment to be like, hey, I'm doing the best that I can in the pursuit of this goal. And I think that's what joy is being in the moment and being like, hey, I can always create expectations that are better than me. I can always create a model or an end goal that is above myself. But right now, I've come this far, and that's awesome. I'm going to take joy in that and know that it's going to keep pushing me forward to the next goal that I have.
Yeah.
And pushing forward while respecting the now.
Yeah, exactly. You don't mind rejection when you're joyful because you're in that process.
Just put your head down and keep going.
And accept it for what it is.
Yeah.
Accept it for what it is.
It is what it is.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. And I have always strived to be the best. The best. Right? Whatever that means. I've always strived to be the best.
That perfection goal.
Yes. Yeah. And it has hindered my mental health quite a bit. And it hinders the way that you look at yourself.
Because the way the phrase practice makes perfect is, I think, the worst phrase, because no one is ever perfect. This is the lecture that my mom would give me that then led into the BU, is that no one is ever perfect. If you think you're perfect, you're wrong. If you expect to be perfect, you're wrong. It's just the pursuit in perfection that will make you the best that you can be, but being happy in the moment.
Yes.
Another thing, my mom has a coffee cup with a Buddha that says, "Let that shit go." And it's beautiful. Just let that shit go. It's all right. All the expectations, all the things you're carrying with you, you don't need them. You're hanging on to them because you're afraid of not being here right now.
Okay. Yeah.
Let that shit go.
Let that shit go.
All the worry and stress is just you worrying about the future, and you can just do your shit right now.
So I guess one question that we can end joy on, and this I think has been our best episode thus far, if I can say so myself, because we've been so articulate with our ideas. Forgive me for confusing our with our, but joy is something that you should strive for. We've established that. What do you think joy entails in terms of the process, in terms of doing what you want to do? What does joy entail?
Have you heard of the hero's tale? The hero's tale is the generic plot of almost every single huge character in almost every mythology. If you break them down to their finest points, then it goes, okay, there's a cool person with some cool stuff, all right? And they have to go through some stuff that's crazy that they get experience from. They become a better person, have some sort of skill. They fall really hard, and then they overcome the obstacle, and they win whatever it is they're trying to win, whether that's a partner, they got a lion skin and were accepted by their father, like Hercules, daddy issues. They're a bitch. But it all comes down to, you have to go through strife. You have to have obstacles that you keep on pushing through, because the end goal it will never be better than the journey. I love the journey way more than I love the end goal. Mm-hmm. And that is joy, I think.
Yeah.
Is that it's a process. It is appreciating the process and what you need to do.
Yeah.
Not need to do, but what you get to do.
Yeah. Well, it's 9:30 at night. I think that we might start recording in the evenings. This has been a lot of fun.
This has been a lot of fun.
And it was a good way to unwind.
Yeah, it is.
Just to talk about how we feel and what we're feeling. So
be emotional.
Yes. Landon, I promised you that I would start telling one joke at the end of each podcast, and I'm going to try this out on you, okay?
We did two last time.
Right, so we're going to limit it to one. Landon, we're going to do as many jokes as I've got until you laugh, all right? That's how long I'm going to say. If we got to go an hour and 15 on this podcast, I'm going to tell this joke, all right? You know who I want to hit with my car, drive them to the hospital, pay for their hospital bills, and then run them over with an ambulance? The people that take the first letter of their hometown, cut the rest of the word off, and add town at the end of it. Like, if you call Edmonton E-Town, you don't deserve the right to vote.
God damn. It's a little brutal. It's brutal, but it's funny.
Like, nothing makes me more immediately homicidal than when I hear Nashville be referred to as Nash Vegas, as if that's supposed to mean anything at all. As if those two cities are comparable in any other way other than we call them cities.
Is that really
people call thing? Nashville, Nash Vegas. Or maybe I should say this. Bad people call Nashville, Nash Vegas.
That's very generalized, my guy.
Okay. Maybe not bad people. You're right. Non-contributors to society call Nashville, Nash Vegas. And it pisses me off. I can't even describe. I can't even speak English now. Because thinking about it makes me so fucking furious.
You're about to blow your top, my guy. Calm
Seriously.
Down.
Like, this is... I can't even articulate how angry that makes
Guys,
me.
You can't see him, but he's shaking. His hands are curled up. He's going into fists. He's biting his nails. He's freaking out.
Like, every time I see that on Instagram, I want to reach through the phone and choke that person out with both hands.
God, dude, you need to take a deep breath.
Because it's... Why? We're already diminishing the English language as it is.
Why are you so angry?
Because just call it the town. Just call it the town that it is. I don't understand why that's so hard.
Why is this making you so angry?
I don't know why this is making me so angry. But Like, it just makes me so mad, Landon.
Okay.
And...
Just referring to a town as something different.
And by the way, you better not recommend me to any shrinks around town. Just
no, I'm not going
thoughts.
To. Oh, but it's funny. I gotta poke and prod.
Well, okay.
Okay, out of all of the things, like...
Okay, if somebody referred to Anderson as A-Town, how would you feel?
That's a very common thing. So many people call it A-Town.
It's not.
It is to them.
It shouldn't be.
It's hometown to me.
They don't deserve the right to vote.
Wow.
They don't deserve the right to vote as American citizens.
Jeez, my guy. It's pretty strict.
Look, we added BAE to the Urban Dictionary. The very least you can do to help preserve the beautiful English language is to pronounce the town that you're living in as the town.
All right, and with that anger-filled joke with going into a tyrant...
It's not even a bit anymore.
No, it's not. It's just you being angry, my guy. Almost unreasonably angry. All right, close it up.
Well, folks, we will be back with what our parents said next week, and hopefully we will bring my wonderful fiancé on to talk about sex and relationships. Sorry, Mom. Love you guys. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend.
Have a good one.